believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show, 2A Radio. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. Do a little bit of housekeeping right now. First of all, if you'd like to participate today, the call-in number is 800-313-9443. Wanted to let everybody know that FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, that's the same group that really screwed up and showed how ineffective they were during the Hurricane Katrina event of a couple years back. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has been doing their very best to put their hands on old closed military bases. And what they're doing with those, what's going on, well, a film has been made. It is called Camp FEMA. And it is directed by a fellow by the name of William Lewis. And it features the likes of RBN's own John Stadtmiller, as well as Alex Jones, who appears in it. And you can actually get yourself a copy of this by going to republicbroadcasting.org and going to the online store. From there, you can get a copy of the new video, Camp FEMA, again, directed by William Lewis, and it features John Stadtmiller of RBN as well as Alex Jones, several other people. You can actually go online and take a look at that and read it. As well, if you would like to spread the good word of Republic Broadcasting, you can do so by getting some business cards. They are generic in nature, as in they don't have a name or a title, but they feature Republic Broadcasting. You could then take these things and hand them out to people within your circle of life, within your area of influence, people you know, people you meet on the street, people you have likewise sorts of conversations with, and hand them a card. Give them an opportunity to tune in and listen to all the great programming right here on RBN. Now, for 100 business cards, and including shipping as well, you also get a free bumper sticker. It's $8. It's straight up $8. For $8, you get the 100 cards, they get shipped to you, and you get an RBN bumper sticker with it. I've seen the cards. They're very good-looking cards, very high-quality cards. You can get those by calling the RBN office number. And now, Republic Broadcasting is in Round Rock, Texas, just a little bit north of Austin. That phone number is 800-724-2719. Again, that's 800-724-2719. And you can call that number Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. If you'd like to just mail in to order those, here's the address. You can send it to RBN at 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. Again, that's 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, three separate words, number 302. Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Again, Round Rock, Texas, two words. Well, Round Rock is two words, Texas comes next, 78664. And again, you can just send in $8, let them know your name and address to send those cards off to. You get the bumper sticker, everything's included. There's more show coming for you after the break, so stay tuned. It's definitely going to be some good information you're going to want to hear all about the Second Amendment and your rights coming up after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
You guys remember a couple days ago, I went through kind of my barrel break-in procedure and also, you know, how to lap, how I lapped, I should say, and honed and kind of smoothed out everything on my 30-30. And I started talking a little bit about gun cleaning. I didn't get into my whole procedure. The reason is it's very long, it's very detailed, it is very drawn out, which is why I've put together a manual for the thing. Just 8.5 by 11 sheets, I think it's 8 pages, and I intend to make it into an 8.5 by 5.5 booklet with pictures. So it'll probably be about 20 pages or so by the time I'm done with it and have the pictures included. I get an email from a listener by the name of Tom. It says, "Hi, Bill. I have to disagree with your cleaning method. Would you agree that accuracy is important to military snipers? They figure out the minimum needed to keep a gun clean and accurate. Doing 20 passes of anything multiple times is just creating work. I used to do a similar procedure. I have since learned that it's unnecessary. I use the USMC way as taught by the 851s, the snipers." So he's throwing out the lingo at me. "I figure if a guy can get an 11-inch group at 1 mile using this method, it's good enough for me." He describes it as follows, which is the same drivel that I get on a regular basis of this when it comes to the military stuff. 2 wet patches. 2 passes with a brush, nylon, whatever. I use nylon. 2 dry patches. If you have to use copper solvent because your groups are expanding, then 2 wet patches, 2 passes with a brush, nylon or whatever, 2 dry patches, 2 passes with copper solvent and let it sip for up to 1 minute, 2 wet patches, 2 passes with a brush, nylon or whatever, 2 dry patches. It's not written in stone as long as you write the procedure down and stick to it. And then he says, here's the break-in. Clean the gun with 2-2-2 or whatever you want, but not too much. Which, you know, 2 wet patches, 2 dry, 2 brushes, 2 dry patches is what he's talking about. Shoot 20 to 30 rounds or when the group starts to expand, then clean, apply solvent, clean again. The barrel is now broken in. The key is consistency. Record how the gun is clean. Do not deviate from the system or your groups will change. My Savage 10FP unfired at the start of a 5-day-long rifle shooting course. Held its groups and shot 3/4 minute of angle all week long. That is 3/4 of an inch at 100 yards. I would have shot, would have shot better with smaller groups with a better shooter. Not bad for a $600 rifle and a $400 scope. Thanks, Tom. Here's my response. Tom, what you just sent me is the same drivel of gun care that the military has been professing since the Korean era. To each his own. If that's what you want, then far be it from me or anyone else in the world to try to get you to change. The military uses one cleaning method and one only. The reason being that if they're in the field, they can use the same description you sent to me. Besides, if a military rifle starts performing crappy, they just replace it with another rifle. You and I don't have that luxury. What I'm referring to is in my cleaning procedure, I have 2 methods. One is the field cleaning method, which is just a shortened, smaller, quicker, get it done, get it out of the way, get your gun serviceable, get your rifle serviceable out in the field. And then the full-on procedure when you're back at home, back at your camp, back at your hunting party, whatever it is. So there is a full-on procedure, then there is an abridged version of the same sort of thing for out in the field. And let's see, I put this, continuing. My sniper rifle, like yours, is a Savage 10FP LE2 with a ferrule base, Badger Ordnance rings, a Mark IV Leupold long-range tactical scope. I've maybe $1,300 invested. When I got it, it shot a 3/16-inch, 3-round set of groups. Nearly 1,000 rounds later, the same rifle is shooting quarter-inch groups. Therefore, it's opened 1/16th of an inch in close to 1,000 rounds. And you disagree with my methods? A method I didn't even fully describe? Interesting. Tom, you cite 11-inch groups at 1 mile. I can't find that reference anywhere, which I was not able to. I can, however, assure you it's with a 50 BMG. That's a gun designed to take out equipment and, if necessary, personnel. Not the defensive calibers we discuss. My cleaning methods were developed over years and solidified during the time I was a Department of Defense training contractor. and saw firsthand the problems associated with poor cleaning habits. The solvents I used and the order in which I used them were helped and confirmed by two separate chemists with master's degrees. My barrel break-in process was helped by two separate shooting metallurgists, one of whom builds custom barrels and holds several world records. He has since changed his methods to emulate mine. Pardon me if I take a bit of offense to the military methods. These are the same guys that carry their guns with no round in the chamber. In your own words, you stated the minimum needed to keep a rifle clean. That's far from the maximum of keeping it clean. I have personally taken clean U.S. military sniper rifles, used my techniques, and pushed all kinds of crap left behind after they had been cleaned with the approved military standard. In fact, they were dirtier than my rifle after I fired 20 rounds out of it. When I'm finished with my book on cleaning procedures, it'll shed more light as to the whys and hows. Thanks for tuning in, Bill. So I just wanted to read that exchange between Tom and I because I'd imagine there's more of you out there. I am very passionate about what I do. If you haven't learned by kind of, I guess, tuning in for a while, I'm a rather meticulous person when it comes to things that should be done a certain way. And I don't just take what everybody else says to be the gospel without looking into it. It's interesting that in a correlation, my girlfriend always tells me about these kooky things that her mother used to tell her when she was growing up. You should tell, well, you know, my mom said that if you eat this, you're going to end up with that and blah, blah, blah. Just some sort of old wives' tale. The same mindless drivel that's been passed from generation to generation to generation that nobody's ever looked into. Well, I'm the type of person, I've looked into a lot of that. I told a story once, I'll repeat it quickly, that when Glocks first came out in the mid-80s, people were saying you can't shoot reloads through a Glock, it'll blow up. You can't shoot them because the chamber is so tight that the slightest little warping of a previously fired casing, will not go into the gun. And this went on and on and on for years until I finally started working part-time weekends at a gun store with a range. And this same group of old just dorks that had nothing better to do but sit around a table in the little lounge area of this range complex of this larger gun and uniform store were going on and on about it yet another Saturday afternoon. So I said, guys, you know what? I'm tired of hearing this. Let's see. So I had a micrometer, and I took down a bunch of the rental guns, all 9mm, because at that point in time, the .40 caliber hadn't even been developed yet. This is how long ago this is, late 80s, early 90s, 90, 91, something like that. So I start miking all of these chambers, and lo and behold, the Glock chamber's actually larger than most. Then I open up the Glock manual, and it says, don't fire reloads, and it's a liability statement. Then I open up a manual from Smith & Wesson, same thing. One from Colt, same thing. I'm like, you guys in your mindless drivel never look into this. You just keep repeating the same old garbage. Something I don't like. So when they say, oh, well, the military does this, they need to be accurate. Okay, that's great. The military does almost everything to the bare minimum standard. And the minimum to keep a gun clean, you're right, that is the minimum. That's the minimum to keep it functioning. I flat guarantee you when those groups open up and they send that rifle back for some sort of deal, some sort of accurizing, new barrel, whatever they would send it back for, that when they take these guns and they go through them and clean them and they start seeing what the issues are, oftentimes you've got opened groups because you've got crud and gunk built up. The military uses CLP, clean, lubricate, preserve, or protect. That's what the C, the L, and the P stand for. If you leave a lubricant in the barrel or a protectant in the barrel, let alone cleaning solution, of a precision gun, it will adversely affect accuracy. It might not happen in the first 100 rounds, but over several hundred rounds, it's going to have very dramatic changes and big problems. Oftentimes, if that little bit of lubricant and protectant are left in the chamber area, you'll have a hard time extracting the round because that the effect of it is the casing swells up in the chamber and you can't extract it. Or if you do, it's very difficult. I have a very specific regimen for cleaning my gun. And I write everything of it down. Every round I fire gets written down in my data book. Please, for God's sake, I have done all the research. Chemists, metallurgists, everything. Basically, almost everything on the market. And I have done tried and true methods with guns that otherwise were shooting larger than minute of angle and got them to under half minute of angle through properly setting this gun up through a proper set of cleaning. Simply cleaning older guns that wouldn't hold a very good group properly with a very long, drawn-out, hour-and-a-half-to-two-hour method of getting this gun back in order, the super long version of my cleaning method, and the guns are back up and running. So please, don't go professing mindless drivel of the way that the military cleans their guns, because I have had first-hand dealings with those guns, those methods, those solvents and solutions. I know firsthand. So there's my response. Information on the Supreme Court hearing the Chicago gun ban case after the break. Stay tuned.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
You know about the AK-47 rifle. That it was developed by Mikhail Kalashnikov. And he was a tanker back during World War II. And he tinkered around and came up with the AK-47, which stands for the Automatic Kalashnikov of 1947. So there's actually information behind it. Well, even in his old age, Mikhail Kalashnikov still worries about the invention that defined his life. At a conference on the 60th anniversary of the weapon that he invented in 1947, the Automatini Kalashnikov, or Automatic Kalashnikov, or AK-47, the elderly weapons designer, who is still chief designer for the state-controlled company that makes the guns, lamented the following. There are counterfeits all around the world now which are plainly not of the same quality as the Russian example. The legendary Kalashnikov is a Russian export success story. The guns are used by 60 armies worldwide, account for up to 80% of all assault rifles, lovely wording, and are known as the weapon of choice for terrorist groups and rebel movements. They're also known as the defensive rifle of the free world. But the Izmaya's Arms factory in the central Russian city of Izhikov, where Kalashnikovs are manufactured, has long been concerned about forgeries. According to Izma Arms' parent company, the Rosbereto Export State Corporation, which has a monopoly on supplying Russian arms to the international market, there are about 8 countries in which dozens of businesses are making their own versions of Kalashnikov. And they are doing this without passing on any licensing fees to the Russians. And now it appears that the financial difficulties facing the weapons manufacturer have reached its crisis point. Its very existence is threatened. A businessman in Izhikov has filed a motion to declare the Izma's Arms bankrupt because it's bankrupt because of outstanding debts of around 8 million rubles, which is about $180,000 to $265,000. Not really much when you consider what's going on making all these guns. The case has caused a sensation in Russia, because for a long time, the Russian armament industry has been one of the only industries considered competitive on an international basis. The Izmaj, which was founded in 1807 by Russia's royals. It's one of the largest firearms manufacturers in Russia. So we're talking about a Russian plant that builds guns. It's been in existence for 202 years and has been making the AK-47 for 60 years, 60 plus years, is filing for bankruptcy because the rights and international patents and everything on this gun, the copywriting of it, has been, well, stolen and used all around the world. Not unusual. There are copies of the M16 and AR-15 all over the place. It's interesting. A lot of the guns that are seized in Mexico, these are some of the pictures and stories that you won't see and read, are copies of the FN, copies of the G series of the FNs, AK-47s, M16s, all kinds of military grade weapons that have no markings on them whatsoever. And they come out of manufacturers, out of different areas. There's some in India, some in other areas around that region of the world where there really isn't any sort of controls, and they don't really care. As long as something's helping out the gross national product, they don't care if there's any sort of violation or trademark infringement or anything around the world. They don't care. And a lot of these guns end up in, well, their main market are third world organizations and third world countries, be it the government or private industry, criminal enterprise, corruption in these third world countries. And of course, that's quite true in Mexico, where you see a lot of these types of guns. So, because others won't honor the Kalashnikov, the breeding in Russia, where they're supposed to be paying licensing fees to these guys for stealing their design, it's not happening. So, it looks as though these guys are filing for bankruptcy. Hopefully, they'll come out of it. I mean, what kind of an era would that be an end to? 200 plus years of manufacturing guns in a plant. The birthplace of the AK-47 that's been making the AK-47 that might have financial troubles into seeing it in its demise, that would really suck. That would be like seeing Colt or Smith & Wesson or Springfield Armory going out of business. And they'd be going out of business because others around the world are copying their stuff I mean, you can sell just so many guns in Russia, and I'm not even sure if you can own a gun in Russia. That's one place I've never looked at. I don't know if you can privately own a gun legally in that country. You certainly couldn't under the Soviet Union. Now that it's the country of Russia again, who knows? I don't know. But that would be similar if it happened here at home. So I feel for these guys. Hopefully they'll work it out. So, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. We got the information coming up in the next segment about the Chicago case going to the Supreme Court. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
With Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
During the DC versus Heller case, you could see the NRA and other pro-gun groups frothing at the mouth, anticipating a response. And when they got a positive response, they said, great. And immediately that same day, filed lawsuits challenging different laws in different areas around the country. One of those was Chicago. Because Chicago's handgun ban pretty much emulated that of Washington, D.C.'s, which had just gotten beat up in the Heller case. So what's happened within these lawsuits is you've had different circuit courts, a couple of them around the country, the second, the seventh, say Second Amendment doesn't apply to the states. It's not incorporated, as is much of the other Bill of Rights. I have a real problem with this entire incorporation thing. How it ever got brought up, I don't recall. I know some of you probably know. But it just teased me off that we've got the Constitution, but as of right now, certain portions of it apply to everybody and certain portions don't because they haven't been incorporated. What a load of garbage. Total crap. So this Chicago case is now being agreed to be heard by the Supreme Court. So Supreme Court to hear Chicago gun ban case. This comes from the Los Angeles Times, not the biggest pro-gun group. Supreme Court's decision Wednesday, which was yesterday, to hear a Second Amendment challenge to Chicago's handgun ban could open the door to similar lawsuits in cities and states across the nation. Hopefully it won't lead to that. Hopefully it'll lead to, look, here's our interpretation, here's the law, get her done. And the people in charge won't need to get sued to follow the Supreme Court's decision. Provided, and I'm saying provided, it goes our way and goes to emulate the Heller case on a national basis. Because the whole thing with the incorporation is, well, Washington, D.C. is a federal area. It's not a state. So that only applies to federal areas. That's what the Second and Seventh Circuit courts have ruled. Garbage. At issue is whether the right to keep and bear arms is a full-fledged constitutional privilege that can be invoked, it's not a privilege, it's a right, you scumbags, that can be invoked by individuals against the government at all levels, or freedom that applies only as it concerns the federal government. Last year, the justice, in a 5-4 ruling, said for the first time that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to have a gun at home for self-defense. Actually, it went so far as to say much more than that. Though the ruling struck down a handgun ban in the nation's capital, which is a federal enclave, it did not decide whether the rights extended to states and cities. Actually, they did. It was the lower courts that decided to put up a fight because they were anti-gun justices. I should say judges. After the Civil War, the Supreme Court on several occasions ruled that the Second Amendment applied only to national laws. In the last year, gun rights advocates in Chicago and New York went to court to challenge local or state gun restrictions but lost. Judges said they were bound by the higher court's 19th century rulings. On Wednesday, the justices said that they would decide the issue in the fall term, which begins Monday. Legal experts have said that gun rights advocates are likely to prevail in the Chicago case. The five justices who ruled against the District of Columbia's handgun ban, led by Antonin Scalia, Justice Scalia, are likely to extend the same gun rights to states and municipalities. But lawyers disagree on the practical effects of such a ruling. Chicago and the nearby village of Oak Park, Illinois, are thought to be the only municipalities that enforce a ban on private possession of handguns. Several other cities, including New York, make it difficult to legally register a handgun, but many other communities have regulations that could be challenged. Alan Gura, a Virginia lawyer who won last year's ruling and now represents the gun owners in the Chicago case, said Americans have the right to carry guns in public for self-defense, including across state lines. That's the guy. Alan Gura is the guy. He's the attorney who argued favorably and won in the Heller case. He says, this case will not be the end of all gun control, but it means politicians must be aware that this is a fundamental right, he said in an interview. Under the First Amendment, restrictions on free speech are suspect and need a strong justification, he said, adding that, quote, the same should be true with gun restrictions, end quote. Gura sued on behalf of four Chicagoans, including Otis McDonald, a retired maintenance engineer, who said he'd been threatened by drug dealers in his neighborhood. I want a handgun in my house for my protection, McDonald said when the suit was filed. This lawsuit, I hope, will allow me to bring my handgun into the city legally. Even if McDonald and others succeed in striking down the city's ban, a lawyer for the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence, that is, the Brady kooks who want to ban all guns, predicted the ruling would not result in the overturning of most other gun control measures. Here's a quote from these idiots. "It will likely lead to more challenges to state and local gun laws. But when the dust settles, the vast majority of the existing state and local laws will survive," said lawyer Dennis Hennigan of the Brady Center to Steal Away Your Guns Because We Suck. I think that's their official title. In last year's decision, Scalia agreed that laws restricting felons or the mentally ill from having guns were constitutional. He also agreed that the government could keep guns out of airports or government buildings. The gun rights clause is not limited to conservatives. Libertarians and some self-proclaimed progressives say the court should rule that the Bill of Rights protections are a privilege of U.S. citizenship. The 14th Amendment says that states may not abridge the privileges of a U.S. citizen. At the time the amendment was written, that was seen as extending the rights, such as freedom of speech or freedom of unreasonable searches, to protect citizens against state and local officials. However, the Supreme Court disagreed in 1873, and this provision was left unenforceable. In the Chicago case, the justices agreed to rule on whatever the Second Amendment and its right to keep and bear arms was a privilege of citizenship. Let me read that to you again. In the Chicago case, the justices agreed to rule on whether the Second Amendment and its right to keep and bear arms was a privilege of citizenship. So there's going to be a big decision coming out on this. The correct answer to this question should be important to all Americans, not just those focused on gun rights, said Doug Kendall, president of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a liberal think tank. He and other scholars argue that reviving the Privileges Clause would strengthen other constitutional rights. So, let's hope so. Lawyers for the city of Chicago, however, have argued the justices to turn away the challenge. They said easily concealable handguns pose a special danger in cities. They do. And it's a special danger to the scumbags that would otherwise make all of these unarmed people their victims. Homicides are most often committed with guns, especially handguns, they said, citing a Justice Department report. They also stressed it was illegal for homeowners to have a rifle or shotgun for self-defense. The court said it would bear arguments in the case, McDonald versus Chicago, in February. So they're going to hear arguments in February. Well, good. And get everything together. I like how he says that they said easily concealed handguns possess a special danger in city. They do. They possess a danger, or pose a danger, to bad guys. I recently told you a story about a lady who's at a gas station in Detroit at 5:30 in the morning, and two scumbags come and do an armed robbery of her and do a purse snatching of it. She takes out a gun and shoots at them. One of them is hit several times, ends up in the hospital an hour or two later, and dies. Well, he's not going to be robbing anybody anymore. And his buddy, who dropped him off at the hospital, probably going to be thinking long and hard before he does things like that anymore. Other people who are now invigorated to carry their guns because of that story are going to cause other bad guys or potential bad guys to think long and hard about their career choice. So far fewer people are going to be victims of crime because this one lady defended herself with a gun. And the bad guys don't want to get shot. If you take away all the guns from the people, you open them up wide open to being nothing but an unarmed victim. That's it. An unarmed victim. You wonder why there's such high crime in areas where there's such gun control laws on the books? You want to know why? because the criminals flock to those areas. They have an untapped reserve of victims all over the cities. Nobody's carrying a gun legally around there. In Chicago, nobody's carrying a gun, unless they're an off-duty cop or something. In New York, hardly anybody can get a concealed weapons permit, nothing but a bunch of victims. In L.A., same thing. In these big cities that have huge amounts of gun control, San Francisco's another one, you just see criminals picking and choosing at will who's going to be their next victim. Because they know they're all unarmed and defenseless. You get to places where a lot of people carry guns, you don't have anywhere near as much crime. Usually, like in places, say, as Phoenix, Arizona. In Phoenix, Arizona, usually you have bad guy on bad guy crime. Well, you know what? That's okay. If the bad guys want to continue to fight it out amongst themselves, I'd rather one bad guy be a victim of another bad guy in some sort of crime than a good guy being the victim of a bad guy crime. Let the bad guys have karma spilleth over upon themselves from the other bad guys. That's fine. When it comes to this case, I would imagine it's going to be the same five judges voting for it, and three of the four judges, because Souter's gone now and Sotomayor is sitting in, you know that she's going to vote against it. Before they ever hear a single argument, I would lay $1,000 down at a 10% payout and a 20% VIG to the bookie that if I'd laid down a G, I'd end up with $1,080 back in my pocket that Sotomayor is going to vote against this. These sort of cases are completely predictable the way that the outcome's going to go when it comes to the voting. Doesn't really matter the arguments. Doesn't really matter the constitutionality. You've got individuals who are supposed to be neutral. Anybody who sits on any bench, from municipal judge all the way up to the Supreme Court, are not supposed to play any sort of favoritism. They're supposed to hear the case, listen to the evidence, and do their job within those realms. We all know that we're dealing with human beings. And human beings have opinions, have thoughts, have feelings. And oftentimes, in these cases, such as the have an agenda. And you know Sotomayor has an agenda. So she knows she's going to vote against it. So it's probably going to be the same 5-4 vote. I can't really imagine it going another way. It may. We'll see. They'll hear about it in February. We will probably hear about it in May or June. So we have 7-8 months or so. By the way, welcome to October. We have 7 or 8 months of waiting around until we hear their decision. So those of you in Chicago and New York and San Francisco and other places that have big anti-gun measures, stand by patiently because you will know sometime in the spring, their decision. We can only hope, imagine, plan for, and quite honestly pray that it goes the way of following the Constitution. You know, there's some provisions of the Constitution that some people don't like. And what they want to do is they want to pick and choose the stuff that they like and keep it. And the stuff that they don't like and not have it around. And it's interesting. It's kind of a double-edged sword, such as the liberals. The very far left and radical liberals love to hide behind the First Amendment until their conservative counterparts want to stand up and argue at the top of their lungs that which the liberals would spend a lifetime opposing. Because all they want to do is stand on their soapbox and drown out the conservative voices with their drivel of the left. And they claim free speech, free speech, free speech, until the conservative agenda stands up and uses the same principles to shout at the top of their lungs all the conservative agenda. And then that's when they start yelling and screaming and calling names. And quite honestly, sometimes just simply throwing a tizzy fit. You shouldn't be saying that. But then when they talk free speech, free speech. Remember, guys, the First Amendment is to protect you, your rights to holler at the government, not against other people. Let me see if I can pull up this Trace Adkins file at the end of one of his songs here. See if I can get this to come up.
Excuse me. First Amendment. Son, the First Amendment protects you from the government, not from me. And you can say whatever you want to out there. You come within reach of me, I'll exercise my right to give you a good old country ass whooping. What I'll do there. My God.
So if you're going to support part of the Constitution, you got to support the entire thing. That includes the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is the one amendment that keeps the entire rest of the Constitution in order from being completely disassembled by your elected slaves who believe you should account to them, not the other way around, the reason that we have a Constitution in the first place. You eliminate the Second Amendment, and the government can go completely unchecked. Not in my lifetime, guys. That should never happen in any of our lifetimes or anyone's lifetime as long as this country stands. Stay tuned. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
U.S. military troops will begin getting required swine flu shots in the next week to 10 days, with active duty forces deploying to war zones and other critical areas going to the front of the vaccine line, a top military commander said this last Tuesday. Air Force General Rene Runart told the Associated Press that as many as 400 troops are ready to go to 5 regional headquarters around the country to assist federal health and emergency management officials if needed as the flu season heats up. The Pentagon has bought 2.7 million vaccines, and 1.4 million of those will go to active duty military. National Guard troops on active duty are also required to receive the vaccine, as are civilian Defense Department employees who are in critical jobs. As a result, the military is expected to provide health officials with an early assessment of the vaccine. Because I can compel people to get the shots, large numbers will have the vaccine, said Runart, commander of the U.S. Northern Command. They will, as a percentage of the population, be vaccinated more rapidly than many of us. So we may see some objective results, good or not, of the vaccinations. In addition, New York healthcare workers are revolting over the H1N1 vaccine, saying they should be given a choice. Employees rally in Albany around the state to chant, "No forced shots." Protesters hold signs that even read that, the state doesn't own my body. They're just upset over an ultimatum from the health department. Workers are being told to either get the swine flu vaccine or lose their jobs. New York is the first state in the country to mandate flu vaccinations for its healthcare workers. The first dose of swine flu vaccine will be available beginning next week. Much of it is reserved for state healthcare workers, but there is growing opposition to required inoculations. Healthcare workers and Hoppa Hoag scream no forced shots as they rallied Tuesday against the state regulation requiring them to roll up their sleeves. I don't even tend to the sick. I am in the nutrition field. They're telling me I must get the shot because I work in a health clinic setting, said Paula Small, a woman, infants, and children healthcare worker. Told you so, guys. This is what we're getting. We have this swine flu shot. Who knows what the hell is in this? Who knows what's in that needle? What it is that now these government organizations are requiring people under their banner to get. Requiring it at the federal level when it comes to the military. Requiring it at the state level when it comes to the state healthcare workers in the state of New York. These are our servants, otherwise known as our slaves, requiring us to do something. No, no, no. We are supposed to require them to do things, not the other way around. I will be damned if they require me to get anything. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely, as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.